This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Mark Garrison. The election and its aftermath are raising new questions about fake news and skewed information with potential big consequences for politics and business. We wanted to get some insight from Daniel Levitin, neuroscientist and professor at McGill University. His new book is Weaponized Lies, How to Think Critically in the Post-Truth Era. Here's his conversation with David Brancaccio.
You've thought a lot about this in business, in science, as citizens of a democracy. We have to sort out fact from fiction, but give me a sense of how our brain is wired to do this, or sometimes to get it so wrong.
Well, our brain is wired to make quick and snap judgments, to work from the gut, and that's much to our detriment. We are influenced too much by shiny new objects and stories, and not enough by statistics, by thousands of data points that we would happily give up for a story from our brother-in-law.
People see the antidote to lies as data, but data requires critical thinking. And you're a man, though, who believes that critical thinking can be taught?
David, I've devoted the last 30 years of my life to education, and I believe that education works. And the good news is it works all across the economic and intelligence spectrum. I think it has to be taught and practiced, but I think our best defense against being taken advantage of by others who would want to take advantage of us is to employ evidence-based thinking.
Evidence-based thinking. But the thing is, what's the evidence? Can we trust the data that goes into the evidence?
We have to ask ourselves, is the information we're being given plausible? What is the source? And, you know, can it be backed up and verified?
And it really is up to us, isn't it?
Well, I think it is. I think the public have too easily given up on asking whether something is true. The lie that EU membership cost Britain £350 million a week tipped an election, even though it was not based on fact. And I think it's a communal responsibility now, because what had been the responsibility of professional journalists still is, but you guys can't keep up with the great proliferation of lies, so it falls back to us as citizens.
I know, but we're so awful at this. I mean, we humans, few understand probability. We lay awake at night worrying about the home invasion robbery we just saw on the news, when the much higher risk might be, I don't know, diabetes from too much sugar in our food.
You're absolutely right. We have a poor understanding of risk. But as I say, these things can be taught and we can practice with them, and it does lead to better outcomes. We can learn what steps to take. That's why I wrote the book. And in the end, it saves us time. It helps us make better decisions about, you know, medical decisions we might have to make, investment decisions, and the like.
Many of us tend to turn to elites to make the decision for us about what's true and what's not. We might turn to a teacher. We might listen to a minister, rabbi, or imam, or listen to the president of the United States. That doesn't always get us to the truth.
We have to rely more on experts, people who have studied something and have the training to comment on it. And part of the problem is that there are so many pseudo-experts out there, or people who are expert in one thing pontificating on another, that we get a lot of bad information. I'll give you an example. Have you heard the claim that 4 out of 5 dentists recommend Colgate?
Yeah, 1,000 times, right?
All right. So, you know, the first thing I would say about that is dentists are probably not the experts in what the best toothpaste is, if you just think about it for a moment. I've been to the dentist many, many times, and my dentist has never asked me what toothpaste I use. You'd need a medical researcher to randomly assign toothpaste to different people and follow them for a while. Dentists are really good at taking care of your oral health, but unless they're tracking which patients are using which toothpastes, they're not the suitable expert, and we can explode that myth ourselves.
Any other rules of thumb among many for trying to make our thinking more rigorous about sorting out lies from non-lies?
Well, ask yourself if the statistic that being quoted is actually relevant. So a newspaper put out a headline and an article last year that more people died in plane crashes in 2014 than in 1960. Therefore, air travel is at an all-time unsafe level. Now, if you're trying to figure out how safe air travel is, you spoke about risk earlier, I don't think the raw number, the total number of deaths, is the right statistic, because there were so many more flights and so many more passengers in 2014 than 1960. You really want to look at the proportion of passengers who died, and it's much lower in 2014.
Now, I'm going to let the other shoe drop here, Professor. At this current historical moment, you are re-releasing your book with, I think, a rowdier title. It's now going to be called Weaponized Lies, How to Think Critically in the Post-Truth Era. Now, first of all, you're making it clear that the right word is lies. But what are weaponized lies?
Well, so the book came out originally in September, and it got a very nice reception. But I had no way to anticipate the events of the fall. And one of the things that disturbed me was that people have become a bit complacent, and they see these fake news stories and lies circulating around, and they forward them. And it's not just a matter of, you know, isn't this an interesting story? Public health and sanity is at stake here. And I'm thinking of Pizzagate, right? Somebody wrote the lie that Hillary Clinton was running a child sex slave operation out of a pizza joint in suburban D.C., and some other person who read this got in his car and drove a couple of hundred miles there and then shot the place up with a semi-automatic weapon. And so the lie, rather than just being innocuous and a funny little story that people told, actually became weaponized.
And from a political point of view, the lie is certainly weaponized. It is a tool for possibly radically altering the public's perception in a way not based on fact.
Well, that's right. And I object to the term fake news, actually, because I think it sounds a little bit too gentle. You know, it's not news at all. There's nothing newsy about it. And fake is, it sounds sort of like a kid faking sick to get out of class. I think we need to come together and just call it for what it is. They're lies. And, you know, maybe some of the media were worried about offending people and so used euphemisms like fake news and post-truth and alternative truth and such. But I say if somebody is lying to you, offend them.
Now, as we speak, some of the, for instance, social media companies are trying to come up with algorithms that help label things that are not true as fake news. Are you optimistic we're going to be able to have technological assists here?
Well, I was gratified that Facebook, for example, is partnering with trained, legitimate news agencies to try and sort this out. And I don't pretend to know how to do this. And of course, David, there are free speech issues here. But we don't want people to be yelling fire in a crowded movie theater either when there's no fire. And so I think that something needs to be done to curtail the spread of lies, particularly ones that are used for political ends or just to separate you from your money. And they're going to have to work it out. I'm optimistic that they will because it's increasingly important to do so.
All right. But another plea here for critical thinking and more rigorous thinking and getting students and really anybody engaged in world affairs and domestic affairs to think more rigorously.
I agree, David. I think this is a communal responsibility. Each of us has to take responsibility. Don't forward or hit the like button on something until you've taken maybe 40 seconds to figure out if it's true. Don't repost until you verify.
And possibly, even if someone's going to be annoyed or hurt, if it's not true, you might have to let them know.
Yeah, and I mean, part of the problem is that the lies are so intriguing that Pizzagate story got a million hits. And the retraction of it that came out a day or two later on Snopes.com only got 35,000. So we have to be vigilant here.
Professor Daniel Levitin is a neuroscientist by training and has been teaching courses in critical thinking for over two decades here. Currently, he's founding dean of the Minerva Schools in San Francisco and distinguished faculty fellow at UC Berkeley's Haas School of Business. Professor, thank you for this.
Thank you, David.